working for him anymore. Some event happens. He works with these big companies like New Balance and Microsoft, et cetera, to help them strategize and execute big giant transitions, like big giant boats. And like, I think we have smaller boats here, but I think it's all still relevant. And he's also taken his team virtual and just doing a lot and helping a lot of people and big companies with this. And he's kind of generous enough to go down market and help us with this. So Joe, I really appreciate it.
Well, man, love you guys. This is probably the fourth call I've done in this, just this week alone, to different communities. And just to clarify a couple points, Michael, I mean, my whole background is in small business. It wasn't until about 7 years ago that we started working with big companies. And, you know, what I would say is all of this transition, all this transformation, all this change happening, you know, there's definitely some things we've learned in terms of some maps and models. But I will also plainly say that this is not a time like anything else we've ever seen, ever. So, I mean, as much as some of this stuff is timeless, I think a lot of this is we're trying to adapt ourselves to this new normal. And, you know, this new normal isn't done being normal yet, because I mean, you know, the best we got is whatever's happening today. And I think that's really what is kind of throwing us all through a loop, which is like, when is the ground going to settle? And mm-hmm. I think the ground's not going to settle for quite some time. So I would just say that there's a guy that I've been following since November. I met Richard Saul Wurman, the founder of TED, has a lot of interesting icons and luminaries around him. There's a gentleman by the name of Alex Lightman. And we'll make this all available to you guys on the other side of this. But Alex, I don't know him. I've been following this dude on Facebook. And in November, he started squawking about this virus. And I was like, all right, what do we got here? And so like December, he was going real hard on it. And in, you know, January, the real story behind Michael asking me to do this was, you know, Michael and Hollis, you guys were kind enough to say, hey man, you guys had an event. We got your back. We're going to send a bunch of babies there. This is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
In April. And then I fucking went dark, for January and February, the worst friend in the world, because a lot of our clients who have business in China and Asia, everything was disrupted. And so their ability to navigate this became very front center for us back in February. So I would just say again, kind of on the notion of we got a head start on this, only because our clients got a head start on this. And I would encourage everybody to go check out Alex Lightman. first, in terms of just everyone dealing with this, I think it's important to start with, and it doesn't matter what the moments and situations are, we trained the DC Police Department after 9/11, and I started the same way, which was like, how's everybody feeling? Right? And, you know, I'm in a room with the 23 highest ranking, you know, police officers in full fucking uniform asking wow. how they're feeling. And it's because if you study any of the science guys, there's a great book called Deep Survival on this by Lawrence Gonzalez. And it's a map on how to deal with disaster. It's all these stuff in here about like how do people make it out of the worst and the hardest of times. And so what we did was we put this in a little bit of a framework for this week for people. So I'll give you guys a little bit of it. It'll take me a couple seconds to get through it. So there's sort of four steps that we're helping people through. And so when you think about leadership in crisis, you know, the first is just being honest with people. And I think reality checking right now is probably something we're not all very good at. Because most of us, when we have notions and ideas, we use those notions and ideas ongoing as like static, as opposed to streaming. And so because everybody's getting new updates all the time, we're having a hard time not only keeping up to date, but there's something called the availability bias. So Michael, I'll use you just to talk this through for a second.
Sure.
So you're in a bubble and I'm in a bubble. And the issue is we both believe our bubbles. And this is likely from a business point of view, for everybody who was laughing at me 30 days ago because I was buying water for the office and I was getting high quantities of vitamin C, D, and elderberry, and I wasn't responding to you, you know, everyone's going to go through their own sort of stages of grief on this piece. And so reality checking is simply putting in front of people, and you're a person too, like what's the right information to follow? And so, you know, it's not just like the bullshit, go to the CDC and the WHO. Hopkins has got a great dashboard that people are watching right now. And I would just say, look, I'm not a health expert, but you know, the transmission of this thing is out of control. The severity is in around 20%, and the mortality is probably going to land somewhere in the 1-2% range. Crazy health crisis. But from a business standpoint, you know, our clients right now, not only the ones who have business in the supply chain in Asia, but you know, you guys, conferences, like, you know, what you guys did was picture perfect to handle this for what it's worth, which is, again, just kind of this notion of doubling down on humanity. Back to the honesty piece, just to say this, you guys are all health experts. And so fundamental well-being is everything right now. It gets you out of these double binds. So double binds are the rock and a hard place. It's when you have impossible decisions, like, do we cancel Utah and Italy or don't we? Because if I cancel, the financial ramification might be almost impossible to get out of. And what you guys were able to do, just to use you as a case study, is you found high ground. And high ground is just a different perspective. And so in every one of these moments, if anybody likes the Ken Wilber theory of everything, it's like, how do you transcend and include more? That's why we love superhero movies, because they get to that last point and they're willing to sacrifice their old self, their old shit, what was yesterday, for something bigger. And like you guys doing what you did for membership, I basically used you as an example to over 1,000 people today to like, you know, hey, this is how you double down on your clients. So being honest, you know, talking about feelings, making sure that people have a sense of bias, you know, that we're all going to be in these sort of overdriven emotional places. Time is a tool right now to really give you guys some distance. So and a lot of time on the honesty front. Any questions on that?
Christopher Walker wanted to watch the book again. We're going to have notes of all the resources Joe mentioned. So on resources, we'll get you all that.
Deep Survival is probably the big one there. Alex Lightman, check him out on Facebook. Sam Harris, Eric Weinstein, and Ben Greenfield all released podcasts in the last 5 days. Mm-hmm. All super fucking relevant. All experts, you know, talking to people who are on the front lines. And back to just reality checking, like reality check is where it's not, the world is not falling just yet, but it's also not fucking normal. And so it's finding how do you thread the needle between those two pieces?
And reality checking in these bubbles is different. I know when me and Michael were sitting for 10 hours a day, sitting around a table across from each other doing this, it was a lot easier to reality check. Mm-hmm. Now both of our bubbles are different, right? And you know, figuring that out, I think the new set and setting in which we have to reality check isolated is very different.
Yeah, basically Cynthia and Hollis and me just basically doing it. And then we make phone calls. I go call you and some other people. Hollis will call his people. We come back and other people we trust. And we go, oh, fuck, reality's different now. And we report back. We'd say what's bullshit, what's real. And then decision-making happened. But it was great having it in person. But now that we're virtual, it's going to be a little more difficult to reality check.
Well, and when you're reality checking also, what you guys did is you expanded your circle.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's the opposite of what people think of in a crisis, which is to contract and to isolate. So look, I've got my shit hits the fan plan too for the family. But from a community perspective, like the business stuff that we're trying to figure out during the day, you know, this is an absolute time not to nitpick. Like anybody who's not rooting for our president to fucking do this well and to like come out of this as a fucking hero, you're just being short-sighted and you're being an asshole. He's not my favorite guy ever either. However, he's our guy. He's the only thing we got right now, you know, in that particular seat. And so that's to me a really important piece. And by the way, around this reality checking, here's the advantage. All the bullshit is going to evaporate. Mm-hmm. So when I'm in big companies, one of the things that they have to contend with is this old scarcity game, old money. We got to get this. We got to do that. We got to get earnings per share, the whole nine. But again, everyone's going through this right now. So you guys have this sort of slower velocity. We all do to sort of take stock to a different set of priorities. Next piece is we talk a lot about with folks, and this is going to sound a little wishy-washy, but hope. Like hope is so important right now. So honesty, yes, face the fucking truth, expand, you know, your bubble, your reality check. But hope is a really fucking big thing for human beings. Like this is the thing that makes us human, right? And so hope means we're looking for progress. We're looking for bright spots. And, you know, I will tell you, like a bright spot is getting through this conference call with the internet working. Like, mm-hmm, how about mm-hmm. internet, right?
Yeah.
Like we all better start counting the things that we didn't think we needed to count before. Like, I haven't shaved for fucking 4 days. Like, I, you know,
and I haven't used it.
My wife took 4 hours to do her nails the other day. She's like, this is like teaching us that we fucking have no idea how to take care of ourselves right now. And I think, you know, from a hope perspective, I would just say that, you know, Gabor Mate is someone who I love, love, love. I know you guys care about or, you know, connect with him too. But this is as simple as going to your team right now. And we started this about 3 weeks ago. So we do now, and I'll give you guys all this, these tools in a second, but we're doing what we call weekly cuss and fuss sessions. So a cuss and fuss session is where each week we get together and everybody can say whatever the fuck they want. Okay. Cuss and fuss. And so for an hour, everybody gets a chance to say whatever they want. Like, there is no judgment. There is no ramifications. And part of what we're starting to see is people are starting to ask this question, which is like, what could be great about this right now? So they're working through their stages of grief and trauma to the extent that they're trying to find the beauty in this. And I think, you know, again, you know, you guys are over in businesses. You don't need this talk, but this talk with your team is a fucking home run, because they don't, they're not looking at the risk reward scenario in the same way that you are. And so the terrain for you, for business owners, is, you know, we're at the apex of the organization, right where we meet reality. It's like our team and then the rest of the world, the market. You know, that vantage point is always going to be more advantage when, again, you just have a bigger bubble. For your team to start thinking about that, that's an incredibly important piece. One of the other things that we've done in terms of just giving people a sense of, and I'm going to channel my inner Jack right now, which is like, how do you give people agency and sovereignty?
I was about to say that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is all about routines. So every fucking routine you ever had is going to get a chance to be reset right now. Your morning routines, your nighttime routines. You know, once we're done with this today, I'm taking the family out again. Every, you know, we end every day with a walk now, which, like, just to zoom out for a second, that sounds fucking awesome. Like, this could be a good way to live, right?
That was huge. I did the same thing. I was like, let's take the dogs on a walk. And it was like this monumental thing that used to just be a minor thing.
Yeah. I took my dog out for a 9 o'clock PM walk last night. And we were like, this is nice. It's quiet. Nobody's out here.
Hold out that maybe it doesn't go back to normal. Like, this could actually be good. Yeah. Right. I mean, you know, all right. So, quickly here, humanize the moment. How do you humanize this transition for people? So there's a great book called, The Happiness Hypothesis by Jonathan Haidt. Really, 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 really good author. He wrote a couple other books that I love. But in The Happiness Hypothesis, he puts forth a really good frame for adversity. So adversity, challenge. And so he says, you know, basically challenge does three things. It helps you understand your hidden abilities. So that's what we're doing here, which is trying things differently in different contexts. Second is you're going to see who your real relationships are, which I think is also so fucking important right
just
now.
Just like cleaning out your Facebook friends, how we've seen people doing that. This is a speed version in real life.
Yeah. And then the third thing, and again, this is probably where we spend the most time with people, which is resetting values. So it's the nature walk we just talked about, which is like, duh, why wouldn't I do that before? Well, because I had all this other bullshit that I couldn't evaporate. I couldn't disintegrate. I didn't have a license to kill. So everybody, you know, what's going to happen is we've been writing about the future of work for probably 5 years now. The future of work is now. The concept of remote, the concept of job sharing, the concept of gig economy, the concept of, you know, not having time be the only measure of value. Like, these are the opportunities and the conversations that you'll get a chance to reset with your team. I'll give you just a couple other real quick pieces, and then why don't we just hit the pause here for a second. I do think this notion of planning versus panicking sounds fucking basic, but if I have fielded it one, I've fielded it several calls recently from really big CEOs who have, you know, much smarter people on their speed dial than me, and they sound like a fucking hot mess. I mean, I'm just, you know, and I get it. Look, you should go through all of those feelings so that you're not averting the fear of whatever you're fucking really scared of. I mean, just to open up, I grew up poor. I grew up not having food in the refrigerator. I grew up, you know, sleeping on other people's couches. I went to 5 schools in 5 years. I went to the worst school in the state of Maryland. Like, I lived the wire, if you're familiar with Baltimore. And I don't want to go back. It fucking sucked. I didn't like being poor. I have payroll. You know, Michael, you're giving me way too much credit. We have a team of 30 folks here at Shift that do all of this work that I'm telling you about that, yes, I help participate and lead, but like my payroll's fucking big. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many payrolls I have in the bank. Not a lot if we go to zero, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, finding a way to plan instead of panic is important. I think focusing on the collective, the we, not the me. You know, most people are having a hard time with their sunk cost bias right now, which again, you guys did an amazing job of this, which you're like, all right, fuck it. No Utah, no Italy. We're doubling down on next year. All you have to do is kick the can. Mm-hmm. The can is your tool, the time. The further you kick time in the equation with your employees and your clients, you've just given yourself almost like an extra quarter when you're playing a football game. It's fucking crazy. It is the easiest thing you can do. Hard in the moment, easy to do, right, Michael? As you're laughing at this, mm-hmm. Just cancel it. Fucking meeting, just an event, just singly the biggest revenue thing we probably had going for the year, right?
Right. Well, the sunk cost bias thing is huge because we've always been big proponents of trying to hack that. This was a smack in the face force of having to deal with it and not get stuck in. And all the people I've talked to in the last few days, it's one or two camps. Those are trying to kick the can and preserve and go towards hope, and those are trying to hoard resources mm-hmm. and protect themselves. Yeah.
And look, I could be talking to you guys in a month and be on the other side of the fucking equation going, does anybody need a fucking funny guy? Somebody, you know, I don't know. I mean, you know, I think that's, you know, really important too, which is like the attachments, the aversions, the biases, guys. This is like, you know, I've had just, you know, from a personal perspective, I do feel like I was built for this moment because I haven't been in war. It was probably the only box I feel like I haven't checked, but I've checked a lot of those boxes. And this is an exercise in your humanity. It is an exercise in using this full meat suit right now, all of it. And so, you know, really thinking about, again, kind of what do you have versus what you don't have is another sort of interesting frame. So let me get to a couple other quick ones here. Follow all the big tech companies, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, Alibaba are showing you the way. So Google and Microsoft giving away their enterprise conferencing tools. Right. Microsoft is a client. Google set up a fund to offer paid sick leave to their contractors. It's fucking cool when you're a company that has a $2 million per revenue per employee pull through. The fucking just Mark Cuban paid all the workers. Ted Leonsis has paid all the contract workers at missing all these games. By the way, one of our clients is, I got to be careful who I say, but I would just say there are a lot of baseball games, basketball games, and hockey games that have affected one of our bigger clients. And guys, it's hard. You know, on the other side, Amazon is hiring 100,000 workers. We can talk about whether that's a good or bad thing down the road. Microsoft is also hiring 200 people in Tel Aviv right now because they know what's going to happen, which is everyone's going to do a reduction in force. And look, if this is a 2 or 3 month thing, awesome. If it's a 2 or 3 year thing, this is an opportunity to pick up some really good talent.
That's been one of my biggest hopes. I remember texting Ferg the other day. I was like, American Airlines just laid off 75%, time to create some opportunity and really do it. Because it's been so hard to find talent to hire and the bloating is getting fixed.
Yep.
I will tell you the thing that we're going to move to personally here is we're going to keep thinking about the equity in our businesses and how do we think about when I get to a good model, I'll definitely share it with you guys. It's too early to tell, but you know, equity is a funny thing, particularly in small businesses. I mean, none of us are going public. I mean, maybe, but you know, of the people in Baby Bathwater, I mean, maybe there's, you know, 10-20% that have this notion of becoming a $1 billion publicly traded, complicated structure. But for the rest of us, you know, maybe we're trying to build it to sell it. Maybe we're trying to build it to, you know, make an impact, sustain a lifestyle, whatever it is, you know, your equity in your business, look, you're either going to make it through this or you're not. It is not the last button to push, but it's definitely a button to push to maybe see if your team would be willing to be a little creative with taking the can down on their comp. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'll need another couple of weeks, but when I get to something good there, I'll make sure that we surface to you guys.
I'd love to benchmark that as a bigger unpacking. Yeah. I've had that conversation with a lot of people like, oh, this is where you double down on people, but and cash and equity and things all change their value. How do we create a new model that works with that now that the times are a little different?
Yep.
anytime that you guys are seeing, I think this is just my personal plug here, which is if you guys are seeing movement in business, you got to fucking scream it. This is important for people to see signals and cues that commerce is still happening. So we have one of our businesses. So we've got a consulting business. We've got a small membership model called Shift Society, but we also have a venture arm, Shift Ventures. And so one of our portfolio companies literally inked the deal this week for $7.25 million in a Series A. And this is their win. This is their energy. You know, this is awesome for us. And it still happened in the middle of this fucking shit show. Mm-hmm. We really gotta, that should be a moment, not for you guys to get all excited about. It's more about in your worlds, every time you see somebody making progress or moving, it's not, you know, it's almost like, is there a way to combat the virus, but with this panic virus, right? Mm-hmm. We gotta literally turn it back the other way. And that's in a lot of organizations. Think about 2001, 2008, when we spent a lot of time with companies. Hope is really a good anecdote for a lot of this shit.
Absolutely.
If you're not remote, start now. This is all a little out of time because 3 weeks ago when Michael and I were talking about this, I was like, yeah, we're going to go remote. Well, shit. I mean, everybody's going to be quarantined here soon, mm-hmm. In some way, shape, or form. And again, whether people want to criticize that response or not, I would just say, look, if we get through this and not a lot of people die, they're going to say, oh, we overreacted. That was the point.
Right.
The point was to overreact. Now, I'm not smart enough to tell you all the other vectors of secondary effects that are going to happen because of how this is going to be a disaster economically. But look, I think we should put our values in our heart first. So remote work, we have a good map that we'll send to you guys. You know, basically, guys, we're like a result-only work environment, if you wanted to use that notion from back in 99. I think Best Buy was the ones that sort of first got onto this, which is we treat people like adults. We don't have anybody hourly. We don't treat people like children. So everything we do, back to agency, back to integrity, it's the honor system. And, you know, we don't really care how much you work. We don't care when you do it. In fact, we don't reward you from working a lot. Like just because you work a lot, it's kind of like 37 Signals sends out a lot of this message, which is, you know, it's about getting it through a high yield, but also doing it in a short period of time. And so that's something to think about. From a just getting through this as a business, and then we'll open this up here. So the harmonizing, so you've got sort of, again, four things. How do you get honest? How do you find hope? How do you humanize this moment, right? Really, really, really focus on the heart of this, which is just, you know, it's more than the golden rule. It's more than a platinum rule. I mean, it's the same reflex we all have for children. For those who have kids, if you saw your kid out in the middle of the street, you wouldn't flinch, right? It's not a gazelle mindset. It's a wolf pack mindset. Of like, how can we have each other's back regardless of relationship?
Right.
But then there's just the fucking reality of, all right, well, all this sounds good, Joe, but how the fuck do I do this in my business?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's sort of five steps that we have here. And I don't know if it's worth, can I share the screen?
Yeah.
Let me just do this. Sorry. Let's
do this. Nice.
You guys see that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Perfect. So on the leadership reset, reset is an acronym. I don't want to get too cute on the acronyms, but it's something that I came up with in 2009 because I was going through our shit. And so the acronym was really simple, which is how do you recognize that shit is hitting the fan? how do you expose all the elephants? That's the E. So all the biases, the blind spots, the fucking binds, the fears, the vulnerabilities. Like, you know, I'll open up. If this, if we lose half our business at Shift and, it lasts longer than 90 days, I got to make a fucking major correction. Like you just got to say it. I mean, sure, I can go raise money. Sure, I can put more money in to cover payroll, but you really just got to sit with it. The S is surrender to it. The E is empathy. And T is just the timing and the terms. And everything has to be reset. I cannot say this enough. Everybody thinks that they don't, but imagine putting everything that you fucking care about on the table and go one at a time. How are we going to do this?
Okay.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
So in terms of the reset for leaders, these virtual strategy discussions are best case and base case. And so really, really, really thinking about how you do this. And I would say, you know, if you're not familiar with counterfactuals, simple frame, what if Hillary won the election? Like, you've got to literally explore a space that did not exist. And you have to do it for a while. And you have to paint it like you were fucking Picasso. So you're looking to paint width and depth to a counterfactual so that you sit with it long enough to almost pretend it could happen. So from a business standpoint, we did this with you know, a few folks when they were migrating tech sales from old bullshit, you know, license service support stuff to cloud, right? Digital transformation. It's the same notion, which is, okay, how am I going to have these conversations with people differently? Red team, blue team, this is stolen from the publishing industry, but it's like, once you get to a place that you think you have a response, you literally argue against yourself. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that everyone says they fucking do it. No one does this.
No one does this part.
Everybody says they do it. Nobody does this. And so I will
say. They do just the tip. They don't ever really fully commit.
They do just the tip. And then again, lateral thinking exercises too. Like think of the Medici effect, a book written a long time ago, but it's like, how do you take, again, I think about Jack, polymath, right? He's got all these different disciplines. He's putting them all together like peanut butter and jelly. So what's the next peanut butter and chocolate? What's the next peanut butter and what, right? There's something in that that your team can be thinking about. And again, you know, coming up with good guiding principles, you can see that these are the ones that I'm using, which is again, plan versus panic, focus on we, not me. You guys can read the rest. But that's sort of the first piece.
Real quick, on the red team versus blue team, can you go a little bit more into that? Like, how would you actually enact that with a small team?
Yeah, so we have five people on our executive team. I'd make one person is sort of the facilitator. I put two people on one side that generally don't see the same point of view because you're also trying to work out the kinks between those two. If the notion was we have three options to move forward, which is the first option is a more as is, the second is an adjustment, and the third is a fucking major adjustment just for, you know, general purposes. Each one of those red team, blue team exercises get like 30 minutes. Like each one of those should have no less than 30 minutes. And the frame is just like typical debate. So you remember like the great debaters, if anybody did debate in high school, you know, give each side 3 to 4 minutes to give notions, give the other side time to rebut, then give the other side time to rebut, and then the last team gets the last word.
I love it.
And letting it be a little bit of a stage is fucking perfect, because what that will do is it will erase the bullshit. And when they try on the words, like we're going to cut all our team, you'll see the words and the body not match. Mm-hmm. And that's what you're trying to get to, which is like, we're trying to get to the part of when is it fully embodied? When is it actually a good strategy? When will it actually sit and think?
And is there a scorecard being kept by this facilitator, or is it pretty up to the unanimous decision that's obvious?
Well, so it just depends on the different structures that you guys have. In our executive team, four of us are partners. One of us is not. So that might be one cut if we had to get to a place where there's sort of four ways to make a decision, right? There's command and control, you know, you and Hollis, you guys, whatever the fuck you guys decide it goes, right? The second way is to say, you know, we're going to do a vote. The majority wins. Okay. The third is saying, we got to be a consensus. Everybody's got to be in this thing. And then the fourth is, I took your input. Thank you very much. And I'm making this decision, sort of a command and control. Mm-hmm. In a crisis, you don't have time for a consensus. I can't say that enough. Like for all of our empowering leaders out there, we need more of like a Giuliani and a Bush and a Trump. Believe it or not. Those, because not that they're making all the fucking right decisions, by the way, but there is a decisiveness of the timeliness of how they're making decisions. And so to give you a real life case scenario, we did this 2 weeks ago as a team. And so as we worked this up, we created the plan. Everybody red team, blue teamed it. We got creative with it. We sat with it. And then 3 days later, we sent it out to the team. Hey, we're doing remote work now. That makes sense. So the velocity on this is a weekly velocity because this team should be meeting weekly, about 3 hours. And there's another good case study, if you guys are familiar with Alan Mulally, who turned Ford around, probably the best corporate turnaround ever. He did this every single week on Thursdays from 8:30 to 11:30. You weren't allowed to leave the room until they fucking got to a good decision. They did this every week for 2 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And the key there is speed of decision-making. Make it and move on, right?
Make it and move on once it's been debated.
Yep.
Sometimes people are trying to make them because you're seeing a volume of decisions you have to make. And look, all of the other frames around, be careful of your bias, be careful of the notions and the assumptions you're making. I mean, the assumptions, you know, fundamental attribution error is a big thing right now, which is everybody's trying to find a cause and effect. Mm-hmm. Just be really careful about causes and effects. Typically in crisis situations, the things that will keep things together and moving are the things that you typically don't manage and count. It's the connection, emotions. It's why I ask people how they're feeling, not how they're doing. You have to change your frame of how you're engaging people, and you'll get what you need out of them. Any other questions on this one?
I think we're good.
Yeah.
All right. Real-time, transparent, dynamic communication. Look, we've been pumping out a weekly email to the team, which is the state of the state. We created a team in Microsoft Teams and in Slack. So there's two. There's one where we're giving guidance, and there's a second where the team can be posting things that they're reading, that they're sharing, that they're that they're concerned about. This is a not perfect map, but this does help kind of if you don't have this, what's going to happen is you're going to get what I had, which is I had 32 text messages, like not kidding, during the webinar. Cause everybody's like, oh, I can't join. I'm like, I gotcha. Now I got to respond 32 times to people. Right. Another piece, we talked about cuss and fuss sessions on a weekly basis with your team. Like you can just do a 30-minute pop-up. Just let it rip. Just take it in. This is like be the best 30-minute, most cathartic part of the week. And I would encourage you to do it at the end of the week. Because that also, Friday is a fucked up day. Most people don't do shit on Friday, even corporately. And small business, again, depending on the kind of retail or sort of business that you have, we use Friday as like our day. We've been using that day since 2009. So it's like our day not to do client work, our day not to do anything that's not of the utmost importance. Daily adrenaline calls. So this is a map from Jack Welch, who recently passed, as you guys probably have heard. I didn't agree with a lot of his leadership. I don't think GE was what it was because of him, but he did one thing I thought was fucking magical. And I did it in 2005 to about 2008, which is we did a daily call from 8:02 to 8:12 every fucking day. Yeah, it was crazy. And the whole team. So we had a team back then of like, let's call it a dozen to 20. We get as high as the 30. And over 30, it gets a little crunchy to try to do this, but it gives everyone a sense, because we're all virtual now, this is a way to latch in. Even me hearing you guys talk today makes me feel better, believe it or not. Right?
No, dude, this connection thing is huge, and it's been ripped out from under us overnight.
Yep. And so, you know, we're establishing this as a leadership call, because at 30 people, you know, because we're going to do the cuss and fuss sessions, and because we're doing a lot of outreach right now individually, the adrenaline call keeps the executive team on the same page. Because otherwise, I got to call, you know, four other executives. I've got three other people on the leadership team. Then I got other people on another team. Then I got there's just too much. And so this is about putting things in buckets and routines. You know, I'd be remiss, and I know this sounds like a little wishy-washy stuff, but it's like, guys, this is also a chance for the vision, the values, the mission of every organization. This is a test. That shit count when it was easy? Nah. How's it going to show up now? Pretty fucking hard.
Absolutely. I don't think that's wishy-washy at all. That's actually what I'm noticing, the mission statements and things from people who aren't real are falling just wayside, and those people who usually didn't take the time to state it or showed it to their actions. Now it's time to really let it shine.
Yeah, I mean, in 2008, I lost $1 million. And I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that to show, you know, it was my first year of marriage, lost $1 million. We hit the wall way earlier than everybody else in 2008. I feel like we have a sense of earliness at times, just given the work that we do. And we've got a bunch of different clients across different industries. And one of the things that really helped me in 2009 when we reset the whole thing was, you know, again, you just, you don't have a chance to fuck around when you don't have any money left. I mean, all you can do is do and be. And so, you know, we'll have some FAQs and some templates. I know I keep saying this, but I didn't want to like waste time reading a template on this Zoom call today. But we have things that will be helpful around, you know, and again, timeliness is the thing right now, which is like everything I did today on the webinar, like legit, I had to change like six things because there was just new information today. So if you can get your company on a loop, think of yourself as like the New York Times, like a weekly email, potentially a daily huddle, a weekly cuss and fuss. You're essentially redoing the calendar of experiences with your company. And put in there, Friday at 3, we had a thing called Better You Time. We've had this since 2009, frankly, because I kept thinking to myself, when we all leave and go home to work, I'm 5 minutes away from my house. Like, I don't have any time to decompress. Like, I got to go from this guy, this CEO hat, this entrepreneur, this asshole at times, when I get home to my family, and I got a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, my wife, I got no time to transition. And so on Friday, I got the idea of like, well, why don't we spend 2 hours on ourselves every day, every week? Like, there should be a closure to the week. And so this will work well in this environment. We do this with our team. So I know Todd from the wine. Drive Farms. He does the meditation with his team every day. This is just the reverse, which is on Friday at 3 o'clock, we're going to meditate and do yoga this week as a group. This is easy fucking to do. We all know 100 people, thousands of people in this space. Like, all you got to do is open up and like let people talk, which is what you guys are doing right now. You know, I had my therapist Monday do a session for our baby bathwater, our little shift society. And he basically made fun of me for 30 minutes in a good way of like how much of a head case I've been about my trauma and my fear and like how he's helping me through this. I like did a group session for me in front of everybody, which I think is a really, really smart thing to do. I want to get through this next couple real quick. So tiger teams, are you guys familiar with that term? They make it down. So when Apollo 13 had its issues, remember, failure is not an option. Look, I'm a weird movie guy. Movies are kind of cool to watch because they do really give you what people want to see in these moments. So the failure is not an option. Tiger teams in big companies, it's basically a get shit done team. So it's like everybody had a job. If you're familiar with Google's model, 80% of people's life is do a job, and then 20% is do something that like lights you up kind of thing. The 80-20 model, again, is another future of work model. So in this place, we arranged a tiger team for, you know, again, we're only 30 people for our group. That is a new, as you can see on the left side, this is McKinsey's sheet. I like their graphic better than mine. We have a rapid response team on the left. So like, who's your rapid response team? But then there's an action team of like, who's drafting the communications? Who's taking care of the transition from, you know, in person to not? Everyone's going to want to help. You know, even I say this to my wife all the time, who, like, anybody with two kids gets the whole second kid thing. Like, we barely know he's there at times. Like, we have no pictures. We're like, I'm still wiping his butt at 7 because I just don't have time to, you know, it's like, fuck, man, just do it. Like, well, why are you still doing this? And what I find is even in these moments, like particularly as stress and tensions are high, like if I give him a job, no matter what the job is, he has the same moral compass we all do, which is we all want to contribute. And even at 7, he wants to do something. So give him a job. Well, in this particular case, you can arrange your team in these teams. And these teams, and again, I can do a whole bit on this later, but there is like a protocol for how these teams come together. There are like little rules, if you will. So it's like, you know, you can set these up dynamically, which is like, hey, I think there's a group of us that should be thinking about how we are doubling down on our customers right now. Awesome. Let's form a team. Let's do a week or two sprint where we meet a couple times. We come together and we propose to Michael and Hollis what we're thinking. Mm-hmm. That's a little like doing wheelies down the highway when you're dealing a crisis, but in these big corporate apparatus mechanism, these fucking big things, they need it because they just don't have the way to move.
Is this something that
small business should be doing this all the time?
So if you're smaller teams, is this something that could be extrapolated in a network. So yeah. Get together with six other companies doing similar yeah. things. It wouldn't make sense if they were too disparate. But within Baby Bathwater, we might have people doing similar things that we create kind of more networked tiger teams, like six companies that do very similar things. Could that be done?
100%. In fact, alliances is something that I spend a lot of time on in terms of this piece, because think about every war movie where two sides are battling with each other, and then next aliens come, and the two sides that were battling all yeah. of a sudden find fucking real good common ground quick. Yep. I mean, that's essentially what's happened to the world, right?
And we said viruses make strange bedfellows.
Yeah.
Yes. The alliance thing is huge. I noticed that popping up the moment chaos started happening. I was starting to get certain calls and messages, and like, look, the alliances are already starting. This is real.
You guys would be better. I think, Michael, you do an amazing job of this, which is, you know, be careful of who you align with.
Yep.
I think you guys, of all of the groups I've ever been in, you guys do this the fucking best. Which is, I've only been to a few events. I'm certainly not your probably most seen or heard from member here in the last year. But what I've always appreciated is that the bar is high to be part of this community. And you can't be a dud, and you can't be an asshole, and you can't be a fuckface. You can't be an egotistical jerk. Whatever the magic is that you guys, the rubric that you put in your heads and, you know, maybe even on paper at times to like decide who's in and who's not. I think that if you guys could give a course, a webinar, I'd love to hear that, because I think from an alliance point of view, you know, there's not really good models for it, right? Everybody's like, do we get married? Do we not? Are we dating? Are we fucking? Are we virgin? What are we doing here? Yeah. I don't even know. Like, I only know we do work together or we don't. Like, there's just not a good third option.
I like the idea of creating some baby bathwater tiger teams. I want to talk to you about that.
Right. I also think knowing that people's payroll and their people, keeping them employed, is a big concern for a lot of people, that having tiger teams that might be shared might be a nice way to help alleviate some of that pressure.
Last two things quick. The new normal, everybody's remote. That's the fucking long and short of it. And so we'll give you guys a couple guides on how to think about that. Long game with your customers. Again, you guys fucking killed this personally, but I would just say for everybody else, there's sort of three or four things that we think about. I got this framework from Richard Saul Wurman, who did TED. This is how he thinks about innovation. He thinks it falls into five categories. So you're either adding something, right? And so in this case, Mark, I think, is one of the best CEOs of a billion-dollar tech company there is. If you're not familiar, this guy has got like monks living with him now. Like, he has found a totally different way to think about life. And we should continue to root for Salesforce in the big tech game here, because his messaging is just fucking spot on. It's exactly what you'd want in someone with that much power and platform. Anticipating the needs, every conference fucking system is doing this right now. Loom, Zoom, everybody is saying, hey, we'll let you in for free. I think that's fine. You know, just I'd be really careful about the strings, really careful in this moment. And so I think if it starts with like, we're going to do this to gain market share, you're going to get land blasted, because the world's just not going to have time for that crap right now. Play the opposite game. This is my favorite thing ever, which is when everybody's doing this, you do that. Chef Jose Andreas, as you guys all know, I mean, this guy flies in the eye of the storm literally all the time into humanitarian crises. The thing he's doing in New York City, I think, is it's easy for him. It's like, wasn't even probably a thought process, which he's like, all right, cool. All my restaurants are going to be closed. I can either just close them down, or, and again, he's got resource, but he's opening these things up for, you know, cruise ship guests and a bunch of other sort of things to just be of service and support. That's it. That's the game. That's the only game that matters. Subtract to the essentials. So again, this is sort of following this framework of, you know, what can you add value? Can you anticipate the needs? Can you play the opposite game? Subtracting down is the famous TED example. Like, there was a podium, no podium, an hour, 18 minutes, no PowerPoint. Richard is famous for this, which is, it's how he's written 91 books. He's all about subtraction. I've never met anybody better than this, than that. Really, really amazing. Governor Hogan here in Maryland, did this little move yesterday, which is he opened up all the emission tests, like, you know, that real boring exercise you take your car to. they're now going to be COVID-19 test sites. So again, like just reduce things down to their very bare bones and then say, what can this be of service and support in this moment? And look, I don't have a gazillion bucks. So money's not going to be my gift. Time is going to be my gift back to the community in this moment. Lastly, Epiphany, Shine Distillery. I thought this was fucking genius. You know, go from making alcohol to hand sanitizer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, I saw that. It was amazing.
Quick pivot, man. Just a quick pivot. Dmitry Buterin, whose son did Ethereum. If you guys are familiar, Ethereum, obviously one of the cryptos. He sent a long form blog, and this was a quote that I fucking love. Just, you know, look through the darkness. The best stories are written in times of severity. If you've not done this, and this is the last exercise I'll tell you guys about, but there's a book called The Five Regrets of Dying. So with all this plant medicine work I've been doing for the last couple years, I know you guys are, you know, equally down this rabbit hole, both for fun and not. And, you know, death is going to hit us all. We don't talk about it. I did a whole conference on death last year. It's just so fucking crazy that it's like taboo to talk about. If you guys haven't read this book, here's the quick summary, which is, we're all going to have regrets. This woman interviewed, I think it was like 1,200 people at the end of life. And like, look what they said. This is it. This is what our ancient selves would tell our younger selves, which is, you know, really basic things. And so when I say like humanize the moment, it's just this. It's this. It's these five things. So we've, in the last week, every virtual strategy session we've ended with has been write a letter to yourself. Like, write a letter from your 100-year-old self about how you handled this moment. Spend an hour with it. Like, I did mine the other, you know, I'm big into this exercise because it back to like time, it gives you time to think about like, how would you show up? How are you proud about how you showed up? How are you okay that you weren't fucking perfect? How, like, when you think about all the hats we wear, you know, from a business owner to an entrepreneur to a CEO to a community person to a father, a husband, a mother, et cetera, it's like, that's the opportunity. So even if you fucked it up royally 10 ways to Sunday yesterday, nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit. Do it again now. That's it. So that's it. That's all I got. And my lucky coin.
Thank you so much.
That's all I got.
So I have a million questions, but I want to open it up. People with questions, please chat them to the group, and we'll start letting you ask, or otherwise we'll dominate with a million of these.
Well, and these are just some of the things that we'll get out to you guys. Rapid response package at CEO Communications, Hour of Power is a cool exercise to do with your team, virtual work guides, and then, you know, just some other shit that you guys can check out later.
I love it.
Me too.
This is exactly what I think we need to kick off this ongoing virtual community that we're going to have. This is the right tone. This is very actionable things. And I love the idea of like having the Tiger teams together and how we do that. Just even with the few exercises you gave, I'd love to see if people actually take the time to do this and how we kind of can collaborate together on how people are going to carry themselves through this. So I appreciate you for setting a very good tone for whatever is next.
So Dan Clark has a question. Natalie can bring him in. I'd like him to ask the question.
Oh, cool. I didn't know I could do this.
Boom.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, brother?
Good.
Hey, just want to thank you real quick before I ask the question. This is phenomenal. So I guess, you know, one of the things that hit me the most were about doing the creating – coming off that you want to help and having that line of being able to do and serve, I think, and not about taking opportunity. And, you know, I see us, and I posted this in the Facebook group, I see us having two tremendous opportunities. One, giving our Brain FM product, which helps, you know, people relax and sleep better, to nurses and doctors for free. I'm trying to figure out a way to do that in the right, responsible way. And then also another thing is creating, you know, light in the darkness by having like the world's biggest focus setting, like a record. And I want to, you know, have like a group focus thing for everyone working from home. So we block out all distractions. We just get work done because everyone still needs to get their work. How would you navigate, like, I guess, going about that?
Well, it sounds like there's two questions in there. The first is, how do you leverage your stuff in not a self-serving way? And tell me what your stuff is again. I'm sorry.
Dan? Yeah, sure. So it's Brain FM. We make functional music.
Yeah. Dude, I know who you are. Yep.
Oh, cool.
I love Brain FM. You kidding me? I met you about a year ago and downloaded it. Thank you for giving me that gift. That was fucking awesome, man.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Are you already sort of plugged into the healthcare system?
We're starting to attempt to, yeah. But not as much as I'd like to be able to, give this out to people.
Yeah. So I would say this is for everyone who's got a play to make right now to be helpful. There's the timelessness of what you do is amazing, but you've got to layer over it a timely, relevant layer of filter. And so the package or the angle, the leverage that you come in with is, you know, can you make this, when do you think this is actually the most helpful?
Gotcha.
No, when would a person need what you have the most in this moment, not in a normal moment, but in this moment? When is it like a no fucking brainer?
I mean, I think for the focus product, you know, right now when people are trying to transition and trying to figure out how to make their lives work where they're not going to the office anymore, from my perspective. And then the nurses and doctors, you know, it's more of maybe in the future when things do end up, or hopefully they don't, but if they do get worse, that's when they're going to need it to be able to kind of relieve them.
So
am I thinking about the right angle?
Yeah, I think so. I think, look, I would test a few different things. I mean, one is you could test, you know, suggesting like create some boundaries and a category and say, we want to serve this part of the population. So I'm going to make this up. We want to serve all of the servers in the restaurant industry while they're trying to figure life out. And so, you know, we've created a rapid response to Brain FM that wants to be of service and support to that particular population. We're going to give you a 6-month free subscription to Brain FM.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You could decide to go a different way, which is you could say, gosh, I want to help the people who are frontline to this. I'm not sure you're going to get much airtime right now because anything that's not essential ain't going to matter.
Makes sense.
We do a lot of work in healthcare and like we're having a hard time even with knowing who we are and knowing what we do and having multi-year relationships with these clients, getting any airtime because it is like legit life or death, right? Mm-hmm. And so yep. I would say you could look at this as a multi-phased approach and like go after the population that's forgotten about right now. And I think the forgotten is definitely the restaurant server forgotten about. I think the elderly, this whole thing is like ageist in a way I can't even, don't even get me started. Like if this was killing kids at the same rate it was killing old people, we'd be fucking beside ourselves.
Mm.
And just because they're old, we're like, they didn't have much time left anyway, go fuck themselves. Right. It's like, that is fucking crazy. It's just crazy. So maybe go after kind of the forgotten, the at risk, the at promise, and you know, test, you know, 6 month, don't do short ones. Cause at this point, you know, what does it matter? And I would say, you know, maybe chunking the market down that way. I don't know if that's helpful.
That is helpful. Thank you.
That was a good reframe of where you're actually going to even get through is first, right? And then where is it maybe people that have been completely forgotten about? So you have all the airline employees, the nursing home people, the elderly stuck at home, restaurant bar employees, and they're wanting to be heard where everyone's focusing on the medical community who's just overwhelmed. You can't even break ground.
Well, and Dan, I mean, maybe test the second population with everybody at Baby Bathwater again, which is take your focus product and add one layer of something different. I don't know what it is because I don't know everything about your product, but if you can add one more layer of something different, like everything I talked about today is everything we've been doing for a while, but with one layer different.
Gotcha. We actually tested that internally in the company. So, I think we have that, and I can follow with Michael and Hollis in case I don't want to take more of your time, but this is super, super helpful. Yeah.
I think it's great. The one thing I'd say I think I love about this is you also have other moods other than focus. I think everyone's pretty focused right now. And I went and called, like they're focused on what to do and on the news and the media. I called a ton of people and most of them are just sort of anxious and nervous and stuck at home. They don't know what's going on. I would love to send a gift to my elderly, you know, friends and the people who are out of work who don't have this kind of network to support them, of like, here's a little something to help you go to bed tonight or to soothe you this way, and start to interact with people who are just kind of locked up and stuck.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. I guess from my point of view, and, you know, the people that I see are the comms and the headspaces that are really trying to, you know, do just that. And I was trying to differentiate and trying to say, hey, you know, no one, I mean, I guess people are focused, but I think people are focused on what's going on. But they're not really focused on how do I make my life, or how do I continue going in this, this fashion of stuff. And that's kind of the angle. But I love that too. I was thinking about doing live sessions, the short answer. So, you know, taking people on a 60-minute, 90-minute, it could be focused, but it could also be a relax and a calm down and a, you know, a control thing.
I'll give you another quick one. I'm going to cut you off for just a second.
Yeah, please.
Otherwise, you're going to leave my head. So think about football, right? Offense is revenue. Defense is expense. Special teams is the leverage. Special teams wins a lot of games. And special teams, to me, in business is your response. So that's what you're working out right now, which is your response to this. So is your response going to be this live hosted session that you come back out with? You know, again, the revenue and expense side, those are going to create double binds, but you're doing it right now as you're just talking, which is what I'm doing, which is what Michael and Hollis are doing. It's what we're all trying to do, which is just get out of the stands, get in the game, and just start talking. Conversation is a prince, right? If cash is king, conversation is a prince. And so, you know, finding a way to just engage with people, honestly, you know, I think it's an easy win.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Great to hear from you, Dan. Yeah,
great to be here.
So I'll ask one. So yeah. You said we kicked the can, which we did. Because the most valuable. So what are, for non-event companies where it's not so obvious, what are other strategies you can see for companies to buy time right now? Because it's a crisis, though. And you said the most important thing, this is for people who missed it at the beginning, you know, how do you buy yourself more time, right? What are some other strategies to buy time now?
Yeah. So look, I'll tell you what we're trying to do as a service company, if that's what people can relate to. Even if you're a training selling product company, the first thing is, you know, don't kitchen sink people. Everybody's going to push the play of more value, more value, more value. And what people need right now is not more. They need the less that matters more. And so really, really, really being thoughtful about the ways in which we talked about, like, your response to baby bathwater is actually, that is the strategy. Like, this format of doing this, this is the adding value without being a wacko about it, right?
Just a more lean on the subtract model, where it's like, we can't go growing and doing all these different things and just throwing more features at it. Right. Here's the things we can promise we can do for you now.
Right. Yeah, so like we're gonna be giving out, you know, anything that you have digital that can be given out is an easy piece. Like, I'll be putting out both of my books up soon, but not as like one-offs. We're gonna put up like Grow Regardless in the concept of reset, in the concept of a webinar to help people reset, if they can have it all, no strings attached. That, Michael, the thing that we're seeing most in big business is people are forgiving payments right now. We don't have the ability to do that. I mean, just not in the consulting business. It doesn't work that way, because it's people, and you know, we can give more time, but charging less is not really, I mean, of course, we'll have to deal with it when we have to deal with it, but until we have to deal with it, it's not a button that we're gonna push. One other thing that we are contemplating, and it goes in line with what you guys did last year, is extending the term of people's subscription, of their program, of their product. I mean, unfortunately, anything else is you're giving out something that you might have the ability to give out, especially in small business. So, you know, Salesforce, Google, Microsoft, they can give fucking shitloads of money away right now. I couldn't possibly tell a small business to do that. Like, so that's why I don't go to lowering your price, because it's a bad short-term and long-term strategy, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Cool. So we have a question from Luke Coopersmith.
Let's get him in.
Let's get him in.
Should I read it, or is Luke gonna?
No, you tag Luke in.
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
There he is.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Thank you. I appreciate the information. And to kind of piggyback the topic that came up with Dan, I guess my question is, we have our authentic and relevant help offer figured out. We are a B2B company, and our service is primarily savings oriented, which is very relevant in a crisis situation or a suffering economy. But my question is, although our offer is authentic, relevant, timely, and actually very, very helpful, we're not that fucking important. We're not a survive or thrive true needle mover. We're not a life or death determiner. And people are trying to figure that out right now. And one question is, when does a helpful solution and yet non-needle mover solution raise their hand as, hey, we can help, and here's how? When do you do that? How long do we wait for perhaps the panic to subside, keeping in mind that things are changing on a daily basis, and who knows when the fucking panic is going to subside or lessen, and people will be able to consider some of the more non-essential and yet very helpful things out there. So when do we do it? And then just generally speaking, and I'm not asking so much channels like Facebook or email, or just, are there any general high level thoughts on how to go out with a message, specifically to businesses who are grappling with life and death?
How much is your lifetime value? Just give me a sense of like, what part of the market are you guys going after?
Our solutions are entirely oriented around companies that spend lots of money with UPS and FedEx, or a little money with UPS.
Yeah. Look, I know this business model. Is that you guys are doing the cost savings on the shipping stuff?
Yeah.
All right. So as an aside, if you reach out to me at joe@shiftthework.com, one of my partners here has vast experience. He stood up a pretty large business model around that. So for just maybe trading notes, might not be bad to talk to my partner, Chris, on this. I think if you're having a hard time finding the timing and the how, you know, I don't know you or your business, it's probably because you haven't been able to maybe get the words out of you yet. And so like what I tend to find, particularly for businesses that are in your position, and Luke, I'm in your position too. I mean, I would hardly say a company absolutely needs us right now, right? You know, even though I can make a very strong case, people couldn't do this thing when we had not these conditions. They really need us when we're all put into some sort of disadvantage. But I would just say, you know, from what I had to ask myself is like, how do I feel about this? What's my response? Not to like fix my clients. What's just my fucking response as a person? You know, and, you know, Jenny Thompson, who is, you know, obviously a big member of this community, a reason that I'm part of this community, you know, I think about the way in which she does this a lot. And so even when it's not her lane, and even when it's not what her business is about. And so, you know, if you're having a hard time, I think Facebook, finding good stories that you believe in, finding stories that closely connect to who you are and what you are, being a champion for other people in your marketplace and your customers. Like, I don't know what the scale is of your business. I don't know the relationships. Are they on LinkedIn or Facebook? But like, just get in the game and start talking. And then write this letter to yourself, like on how you handled this. And maybe publish that as your first piece. Like, this is how I'm hoping I did. And I know I'm going to fall short. And I know I got to figure it out. But I would say that letter could be the actual Kickstarter, because what people need to feel is less bullshit business. They need to feel fucking heart and human.
Yeah. Can I say one thing on that letter idea? I have been blown away at the amount of letters from the founders of every company I've ever interacted with on this, as I'd love to see Luke and his business, which is sizable, do something like that, but follow it up with this offer of something of action that you're doing for them for it, not just the letter, because now I'm just archiving because I know what it is, right?
I love that. I love that. I think that's a great idea. And again, you know, invite people to do the same exercise. I mean, it's not my exercise. I fucking ripped it from someone else. I mean, it's the same, you know, Yannick is actually Silver, the one who he used to always talk about, like, what would my 111-year-old self say? And I think, you know, that might start it, Luke. I don't know if that helps. And if not, send me a quick note and I'll connect you with Chris. And you guys can see if you can work some magic together.
Awesome. I appreciate it, man.
Let me follow up on that one. What are things not to do? Because a lot of people are going to try to be really self-serving with how great they are. And a lot of brands are, right? And I think people, like you said, they're going to see through that. So what are some examples of stuff that people are thinking they should obviously do that are probably bad moves?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you a couple examples. I have a dear friend who I've journeyed with probably 25 times, who is trying to short the market. I think he doesn't understand that he's winning on the backs of people losing. And this basic stuff. You can explain it away with all the libertarian views about survival of the fittest, and I get that all turtles are not going to make it to shore. But like, if the only way you can create value right now is winning while people lose, I think that's something for you to maybe think about and do some more mushrooms. Second is othering people. Oh, othering people. Those are other people. Those are not me. It's drawing these lines in the sand about where your responsibility of downstream effect stops. I don't have to worry about my straws and my bottles because I don't fucking see the plastic in the ocean. Like, it's the distancing yourself from what you know already is. You're seeing this happen a lot right now in the industries that got hit the hardest, which is people are trying to one-up each other. Like, I'm paying my people unemployment. We're doing this othering piece, which doesn't look good. It doesn't look good. It doesn't feel good. You know, occasionally our president was having a hard time with this at first, which is blaming Obama for the coronavirus. It's like, you can't other people right now. Othering is not good form. The basic things of thinking about sales conversion, I think if you can have your business withstand the next 90 days without asking one more dollar from someone, that's my personal lens on this. Think about it. I'm not saying you can't do more business. And look, you know, shit might hit the fan where we might have to like ask people for money, you know, in a client sort of fashion. But like, I think if you can wait until you're asked, like imagine you're a vampire. You're not allowed to go in unless someone's explicitly said, come in. I think those seem to be like general good rules of thumb right now, of just good human decency.
Totally. So we have, that's awesome. So we have two more. We have Shelby Larson and then Jenny Thompson. Shelby.
Hey, Shelby.
Hi, guys. Hopefully you can understand me. I've been pretty sick over here. We've been in self-quarantine for a few weeks now, but it's not COVID, so that's good. Okay,
good.
So my question is, first of all, amazing, Joe. Thank you. So much love for you. I have this impact brand, nevertheless, that hasn't really launched yet. And I went to the baby bathwater event in Denver, and they freaking railroaded my ass, and I changed my entire business model overnight. My partners flew out. We had annual planning. It's been great. Can you imagine if I was in the middle of a Kickstarter right now, Hollis and Michael? Yeah. Every day I'm thankful for that Denver mastermind. What I think I'm going to do, and it's a little bit nervous, so one product line that we have that's being delayed because we can't manufacture right now very easily is a journal developed with a neuroscientist on the neuroscience of happiness. And it has a methodology that I developed. I didn't develop it, I just packaged it on ways that people can nevertheless through a lot of pain. So what I'd like to do is take that methodology and put it online for free. And I'm having my designer put together a digital copy of the journal. So my fear is that I look like I'm profiteering and right. I'm super douchey, but I'm not monetizing it. But later, of course, those people will be on my list, right? When I do properly launch my business. So I'm just wondering to the people here, like, my intention is pure and innocent, you know, I really want to give, but I'm a little bit worried about looking like a douchebag. So I just wondered.
Right. No, great question. Know. That was the question I was really asking Joe, what not to do. Like,
yeah.
When are you going to look like some, even if you are a good person, what can people do that they think is a good move that could really backfire rhetorically?
It's right. Not going to backfire. Just don't be a jerk. I mean, offer it free. I mean, I'm not trying to skirt the question. Only you know if your intention's good. And look, you could misstep, but if humanity is a weird duck, I mean, we will take back anyone. I mean, O.J. Simpson is free, for fuck's sake. I mean, as long as you, like, you know, I mean, he's never really apologized. I mean, that's a terrible example. You know, but I mean, people, even if you misstep, it's okay. I think, look, everyone's going to play the same game digitally right now, which is, you know, let me build my circle bigger. Let me invite you in for free. And look, we'll figure out the fucking money part of this in 6 months, in 3 months. I think, again, if you, not to be a hammer here, write a letter. Use this languaging, use this talk track, use the fact that you care, and maybe, Shelby, like, maybe get off of the copy part of it and maybe do a couple of these sessions. Yeah. And just people can see you and they hear you, they feel you. And look, you know, I think at the end of the day, people want to be seen, they want to be heard, they want to be understood. And I think if you can find a way to, like, be the example of feeling heard, seen, and understood, I don't think you have any worries about it. I mean, you can hear it when someone's fucking around. Did anyone, Shelby, fuck around? And she's just like, no, I really got this thing and I really want to be helping. I'm like, go, do it, help.
Yeah, it was like Michael and I have been saying, frames over facts. So if you frame this correctly and you give the frame of why you're doing it and just speak honestly about it, I think you're in a good position to do so. And I think you're going to find a lot of support in audiences who are looking for things like this to deliver. I literally just saw Mirage post it. He'd be interested in telling his list about something like that. So
I'll give you one other thing. And again, it's a bit of a screwdriver, not a hammer, but it's the same general thesis, which is, I work with a guy who, you know, is all about bringing the downloads and the flow down, and he's fucking really good at this. And he just had me do a different letter writing exercise, so please don't laugh. But he had me write a letter to, because he was trying to pull out of me, like, what's the future of work going to look like? And he's like, I want you to write a letter to the CEO of your biggest client, right? I want you to write a letter to your dad. I want you to write a letter to your wife, and then I want you to write a letter to your kids. And I wanted to say the same thing about the future of work. So what he did is he's sort of time traveling me to the different people that are going to be affected by this thing called the future of work. And what it did is it helped me arrange my thoughts so that I didn't sound like a douchebag. And maybe I do. I mean, we'll wait until after this is over. But finding a way to sort of just step in it. And what people will feel when you step into it is unshakable vulnerability met with inflexible resolve. It's Churchill. That, to me, is the goal. I mean, that's the aim, not the goal.
I love that. Thank you for answering me. I really appreciate it. I just want to do it right because I believe in it, and I think it could. We've been using it internally, and we have a Facebook group of about 700 people, and they're all using it and reporting, you know, feeling a lot happier and calm throughout their day by using the process. So if I can share it, I just want to share it and just don't want to look like a tool. So thank you for your advice. Appreciate it.
Very cool. So I'm Jenny Thompson. She's the reason why you're here, Joe.
She is.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, Joe.
Hi,
Joe, I sent you a text of Lulu watching your webinar.
I love that, by the way. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah. And so I don't have a question, because any questions I would ask you, like, my business is in such a different stage than most people's business. And I think we're actually uniquely positioned to come out of this fairly strongly, as you can imagine, with what I think is going to happen in the gig economy. I just wanted to share when Michael said what not to do. My standard when I was at Agora, and it is really my standard all the time, if you would not sit down with your grandmother and tell her what you were doing without making excuses for it, don't do it. And think how many people's grandparents are affected by this crisis. And so my role was always, if I wouldn't let my grandmother spend her social security check on something, we didn't do it. And that didn't mean we didn't market aggressively. I know Agora has a reputation and our copy, but the product behind it had to be something I would let her spend that money on. And then I also will say, I think for a lot of you guys who have more established businesses than I do, I'm getting a ton of emails. I know we all are, like, what we're doing about COVID, and, you know, we're closing our stores and we're giving people vacation and we're doing this, and that's all great. I don't need to know most of it. But nobody has said to me, can we help you get through this? And I think for those of you who have strong B2B relationships, writing and saying, how can we help you? And what do you need from us? And Shelby, you know, if you have this list of people that are looking to you for this journal and how they're going to progress, I think writing to them and saying, how can I help you now? Is, and then responding based on what they're telling you, is a gift to both of you. So I don't want to step on Joe's toes at all. Just that grandmother standard was always a huge part of my business. And I think it's especially relevant now.
I love it. I think the grandmother standard is a thing. Let's make it a thing.
It's been in my business for years. It's in my book. It's always been mine. Like, I don't mean mine, like you can't use it. I'm like, it's always been my guiding principle because I loved my grandmother and I didn't want to steal shit from her.
Right. And I think on the B2C, you can do the same thing without taking their money. I mean, I think it's a big question. We have a lot of B2C people here. They don't need clients, they're their customers. Is what can you do that doesn't look like you're being a fake hero?
Ooh, I love that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and look, you can, I mean, small things, particularly in a B2C environment, like one of our clients, we just said, look, just tell everybody over the next 90 days, you're just going to half the cost of what it was. They're going to buy it anyway. Like, that's easy. Get no skin off your back. Go ahead, do it. You know, that to me is not a fake hero. You know, you may not be like fully jumping in the fire with them, but fuck, something. Again, it starts with not just the grandmother standard and the fake hero piece of avoidance. It's if you can get settled with your own well-being through this, look, I'm working on it too. And part of working on it is just fucking get off the couch and start talking to people, right? Because the second you can start to be of service and support to others, like, the rest of my shit will just get handled the way it needs to get handled.
Yep.
Very cool. So we have one more question. Chandler Stevens, and this is a great question about what do you do if you're a one-man operation?
Hey, am I coming through okay?
Yeah. Hey, Chandler.
Cool. Hey, yeah, thanks everyone for putting this together. I think I saw Eric mention something similar, but just wondering, I mean, one-man business, basically B2C, doing what I think is very valuable work in a situation like this, but certainly not essential work. Helping people move better, think clearly, get their heads right, all of that. But then it's a challenging ethical wrestling match to be like, well, shit, do I sell stuff to people at this point? Because, you know, cash flow is an important thing. Or give away the farm. I feel like everyone in my space is doing kind of what you said, like, let's give all the shit away for free, which just seems noisy and counterproductive in a lot of ways. So I'm kind of wondering just any insight you might have on how to navigate what is admittedly kind of like murky, weird ethical water.
Yeah. Well, back to the grandmother standard, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things that's important is not to look at what everybody else is doing in the way in which you're about to formulate your thing. So I'm a big fan of expanding your circle of like, don't just look at what other, is it a coaching model? Is that what
you
have?
Yeah, coaching model.
So from a coaching model perspective, look, there, you know, the Robins, the Burchards, the guys that have machines behind them are gonna pump out content here like you've never seen. And again, we can be, you know, judgy about it later. I would look at it differently, which is, you know, if you have a core group of customers and those customers can see you through the next 6 months, then the answer is simple, like double down on those customers and make it a really enjoyable experience for them. If you're in an environment though, where you need a few more customers and you're saying, hey man, I, you know, to make this thing work and for me, I want to be of service and value, but I need to capture that value. Like the purpose of a business is not just to create value, it's to capture value, right? If you create value without capturing it, you're a not-for-profit. If you capture value without creating it, you're corporate America, right? And so, you know, part of this is the trick of doing both. I would say what I hear, and again, it's hard to get this in just 30 seconds. the amount of time it took me to dust off the exact change management program we've used 600 times, and I'm not bullshitting, like 600 times. I mean, 7 minutes before the webinar, we were still changing slides, because there's the timelessness piece. There's everything that you woke up with 2020, all your gifts, your contribution, your product, your service, your value prop, the whole nine yards. But now it needs another layer of what's the timely. So what's the next level of problems that you're trying to solve for people? Because the problem set did just get fucking crazy. And so maybe it's more of the same, but maybe it's more of the same in what ways? And so you got to get down to, like, are people, you know, how scared are people? Are people thinking about, like, and again, I love my friends with, you know, what you're going to see in this moment. And Michael, I think you're amazing at this, which is people's privilege are going to start oozing out of their pores, right? Like me joking about, like, having to watch my wife do her nails for 4 hours. Like, that's, it's, you know, I'm saying this to be funny, but that's what you're going to start seeing from, I think, the marketplace, which is we're all going to have to settle to a new level of comfort and ease and grace, and then play that out for yourself, which is then what's the next series of challenges they have? Because what you do is the tent pole. The tent is the new offer. And the new offer doesn't have to be entirely new. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. Michael's like, I didn't even know you did this. And I'm like, I know, I don't fucking talk about it. You know, it's like, look, and I'm not the only one. There's a lot of other people. And I had to recreate a whole new model for it because it ain't the same time. So for everybody who's struggling with this on do I offer my stuff or not, I would say before you think about offering what it was, go back to what I said earlier. What does it need to be today so that someone will take what you have to give?
Beautiful. That's great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
This is amazing. Hollis, do you have any follow-ups? I know you're busy, so I really appreciate this.
Yeah.
I'm here. We're going to do the nature walk in a little bit. So I'm sincerely honored that I was asked to do this. I love community, even though I'm not, you know, I haven't been at everything I wanted to be at, but, you know, of all the groups I've joined, you know, from a global perspective, you know, and having my own little one, you know, this is a wolf pack for sure. You know, you guys have incredible connections, and connections in the figurative, like you can just feel it. It's palpable. I mean, if people listening to this don't feel the love, the care, the concern, you know, and frankly, the attitude from, you know, Michael and Hollis, you're not paying attention. You know, I'll do this every fucking day if you guys want, and just because I'm getting as much out of it as I, you know,
be careful what you offer. No, but yeah. I know you got a busy day. I know it's 5:30 there. I really, really, really appreciate it, man. Big time.
Yeah.
Very helpful to me.
And I know that some people will hear the recording of this and stuff. And just a big thank you for taking the time to do this. It's awesome. And know that on our end, we are getting ready to communicate more. We know all of you are sitting at home and hanging out, navigating a lot of different situations. So just hold tight. There is a plan. We're following Joe's process and meeting and beating shit up properly before we just sick it on you. But we wanted to get started, and we figured Joe was the best way to kick this off. And we're going to keep working through what are the ways that we can keep this community strong, kind of thrive together. So stuff is coming, and I'm really, really happy with the way this worked for the first one to set a tone and a frame for how we can move forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you again.
Love you guys.
You too. Bye-bye.